Okay, that was really great getting us into the swing of things, is Mary Lou Williams, arranger, conductor, and superb jazz pianist at the helm, with some great sidemen for this wild, raucous live recording of Sea Jam Blues at the Pythian Temple in New York City in 1952, or as my aunt would say, in 1952. You heard Harold Shorty Baker on trumpet, and Vic Dickinson on Morris Lane on tenor sax, Vic Dickinson trombone, Noel John on guitar, Ed Safransky on bass, and Don Lamond on drums. By the way, the Pythian Temple is still there in a way. It's at 135 West 70th Street, between Columbus and Broadway and the Lincoln Square area. It is now a luxury condo building, but it used to be where the Knights of Pythias would gather, and then when the membership started to decline, they leased out space in the building, and Decca Records set up its studio there. By the way, Mary Lou Williams was phenomenal. You should get to know her. She was a great, great instrumentalist, and wrote, as a matter of fact, for people like Duke Ellington and Benny Goodman, and actually was a mentor and teacher of Thelonious Monk and Charlie Parker, Miles Davis, Dizzy Gillespie, and the names go on. She died in 1981 at the age of 71. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Tuesday, December the 31st, and it's the last open forum for the year. It's appropriate, I think, that the year should end with you having your say as usual. So speak now, or you'll have to wait for a whole new year to come around before you get your turn again. But really, what are your thoughts as this year comes to a close? What are your observations? You take the conversation where you want it to go. And really, let's be, what do you see for, you know, I hate the idea of, you know, predictions and expectations. Okay. Maybe it's a good way to say, how did we come through 2013? Essentially, and whether it was a good way to brace us for what's to come in 2014. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's share our thoughts as usual. We will not break from our routine. Tuesday belongs to you, so let's hear from you. Harvey, you're up first at bat.
Hi, Chief. I want to wish you and your wonderful audience a happy new year and best of holidays.
Thank you so much. Same to you.
Thank you. Well, you know, one of the major things I focus on is the environment, and I'd like to see 2014 become the environment of reducing our carbon footprint on the planet. And I happened across an article, I don't know if you saw it, the headline was $1 billion Climate Denial Network Exposed. Did you see that?
No.
Okay, and it says here that there's a group of a secretive group of 91 think tanks and industry groups that are primarily responsible for conservative opposition to climate policy. Almost 80% of these groups are registered as charitable organizations for tax purposes, and collectively they received more than $7 billion last year. They're like American Enterprise Institute, the Heritage Foundation, and they're just 91 secret, you know, it's like a covert activity, is to make us think that, you know, climate change doesn't exist. So this is funded. It's a business. It's a climate denial. Climate change denial is an actual $1 billion business. And so I think that everybody should be aware of that and not be swayed by what you hear out there when it comes to saying, oh, no, it's fine, everything's fine. It's not fine. And so I think that this would be a good year to come to that new consciousness that we live, that this is our home, and we have to protect it. It's a small little place, after all, and it's our beautiful planet Earth. And so I feel that this is a good direction that we should all move toward. We have the technology, and we can move toward collectively reducing our common carbon footprint, and that's what I'd like to see in the coming year.
Very good thought, and thank you very much for that information. That was good to know. And we begin to see, you know, as we connect the dots, it's not news that these groups historically have been opposed to, you know, what people would call activism around climate change, but the fact that they are working in concert with each other is new. And also that one of the things that people could take away from this is that these folks not only believe strongly in their philosophy, but they fund it. And this is something that I think other communities need to take to heart. When you have something that is important to you, you also have to assume the responsibility to fund it, to make sure that it works and that the message gets out. Thank you so much, Harvey, for starting us off today. Thank you. Clara from Philly, how are you?
Well, hello, Yatrice.
Hello.
I want to say thank you so much for all the education you've provided me, and I'm sure other people in the audience this past year.
Well, thank you so much.
I really appreciate what you've done. I wanted to say something about, really in response to something you raised in a previous program where you were asking, where do we go from here? You're probably doing that now, but you were raising it in the context of what to expect from the administration.
Mm-hmm.
What can we extract from them in terms of benefits?
Correct. That was pretty much where we were going.
Yeah. Okay. I've been thinking a lot about this, and as I was listening to you, I was thinking that you still have hope that there's something that we can get and it's worthwhile to focus on what's going on, not only with the Democrats, but the Republicans or also Congress and or the Supreme Court. In that context, I thought about Mr. Maddox's proposal for another party.
Mm-hmm.
And my thinking is that political parties are inherently corrupt in this system, or they are vulnerable to corruption because of the strong influence of money. And
no question about that.
I also believe that capitalism breeds greed, and people who are well-meaning often almost always fall into that trap. I can name politicians who were once exemplary, and now they're silent.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, I think you seem to be speaking primarily to the black community, and that's important, but I also think it's important that we begin to think of ourselves as part of the greater community, because we need everyone.
Well, in fact, that's a good point that you raise. I speak specifically to the black community in some cases, but when I speak about these things, I speak with the understanding, having established a relationship with the audience, that part of everything that we do as a, quote, progressive community, unquote, is that we always have to be mindful that it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. We always have to remember that in almost every single initiative, we simultaneously have to battle that permanent thread in the fabric of American life, which is racism, racial oppression.
Exactly.
It pops up so often in just about everything. Is almost unavoidable, whether you're talking about inequities in society or you talk about, education or healthcare, you see disparities time and again. And the work of the progressive community is not to take umbrage that one community or another community, when we talk about African Americans and Latinos and Native Americans and other disparate groups that are so disproportionately negatively affected, the work of the white progressive community is to understand that they have to have allowances for the fact that while we are talking about a thing in general terms, we also have to be mindful that we are living in a race-based society, so that we must have within our consciousness a resolve to incorporate these disparate groups into the conversation as it applies to solutions that we come up with.
Yes, I agree with everything you said about that. I wanted to just add something to that. I'm just thinking that we do need to, as a community, to focus on our own needs primarily, and focus on the concept of self-rule in terms of doing as much as we can for ourselves, because we can expect very little from other people, as we know, other groups, because resources will become less and less available to more and more people. There will be a push to the of the whole, I'd say, the 99% toward the bottom. We will be more closely, we'll be more similar in our needs. But we need to become more self-sufficient, and I can name some examples, like the basics, like food. I keep talking about that. Growing our own
is related
directly to health, studying how to take care of ourselves. Nobody's taking care of us. The doctors don't know how to take care of us. I read a book about 10 years ago by, I don't remember the man's name. It was an old black man who lived to be 107. The name of the book was Life is So Good. And they asked him, what is the secret of your long life? He said one sentence, stay away from doctors. But he knew what to do, probably.
I like that.
I mean, that's become my way of thinking. I hear so much about what the medical establishment is doing. It's a cartel working against us. So we have food, you know what they're doing to the food, health, and then education. We can lead by example.
Well, these are the things that I continue to point out. To me, life boils down to about six key things that we need to, as that I designate as strategic resources. These are things you ought to have. And you just mentioned a couple of them, food, health, education. You want to talk about, you know, your safety. You want to talk about what is the vision for this country? What are the resources that we have that everybody should have? But you're correct. As things get tougher, the resources, anything good, anything that people you think ought to have just because they are living and breathing on this earth, these things will be in short supply. They will be made to be in short supply because it won't be enough for people to differentiate themselves on the basis of income. It is also on the basis of access to resources. And this is how you keep a population not only racially bifurcated, but also in terms of who gets and who does not get. And this is the land of zero-sum thinking. My prosperity is directly related to your impoverishment. And that's the accepted norm. We can't have everybody now enjoying education, good quality education. We can't have everybody being able to get access to quality health care. It has to be portioned out, because if we have everything available to everybody, you know, we'll just have a socialist society, and we're just not going to have that, are we? Thank you so much, Clara.
No,
wonderful to talk
you.
To you, and best wishes for you in the new year. You've been such a wonderful addition to this program and to the family of listeners. Thank you so much. We go to Clara from Dallas. Hello, you're on the air. The number to call, by the way, is 888-874-4888. It's our last forum for the year. Your thoughts as we ease into 2014. Hello, Sarah.
Greetings to you, Utrice, and greetings to the PRN audience. Let me start off by saying I hope that they have an enjoyable year coming up. Do not drink and drive. If you're going to do so, please stay home, because they're going to be on the road looking to make their quotas tonight. So please stay off the roads and let's be safe in 2014. For this year coming up, Utrice, and by the way, thank you and Gary and all of the other hosts on this channel. Y'all have done a marvelous job in keeping us informed, because as we can see with the consolidation of the communication airwaves that are going strictly conservative or foreign language, that voices of reasons are being shut out. So internet is going to have to be the way that a lot of us are going to have to go in order to get our word out, because they're doing their best to get you off terrestrial radio so that you will not be able to pass the information along. What I would say for us as a community, because I'm primarily concerned with black people, because I'm seeing that we are at a very bad disadvantage as a people, and a lot of us are not being cognizant of the facts, and we don't want to get ourselves together because we let a lot of talking heads keep deluding us, telling us that we're doing so great, things are not as bad as it seems, and we want to stay in this delusion and not look around us and see that we control nothing. We're not even supplying food to feed ourselves, which is a basic necessity that all human beings or all life need on the planet, is to be able to provide food and shelter for yourself. And if you're not producing food to sustain yourself, then you are in bad shape, you trees. Because if a bad situation were to come up where they have to shut down the food supplies and be interrupted, guess who? Guess what community is not going to get taken care of? We are dependent on the larger community to bring in food, to truck in food, bring it in by trains into our community. It's going to go to the dominant community. They're going to be well taken care of because it's their food. They control the resources, and they control the supply coming in. So they're going to get first preference, and whatever is left, you're going to be trickled down. And then here you're going to be coming in there. We already know what's going to happen in most cases with the selfish nature of a lot of people, where they always want to keep everything for themselves. We're going to find ourselves either in a quarantine position or at people at gunpoint trying to chase you back if you were to do a rush on to come on to feed ourselves. So hopefully in this coming up year, what I would see us starting to do, take stock of ourselves, realize that land is a premium. We need to start feeding ourselves, get back to getting our hands in the dirt, get back to producing for ourselves so that we can be a sustainable community. Everybody that comes here, they're here to take care of themselves. They're not here to take care of black people. They're doing what they're supposed to do. We are the ones who are not doing what we were supposed to do as a people in taking care of ourselves. We're acting as children, dependent, waiting on some adult, someone else, to come and take care of, or they need to give us a job. Nobody have to give you a job. It's not your job. You're not guaranteed. Each community is responsible for being able to maintain that community. We are going to have to be the only ones to make sure that our unemployment numbers go down, because it's going to have to come from us getting into businesses and helping to sustain, because Europeans, they primarily take care of themselves. The Asians, the Arabs, the Latinos, they employ themselves in the majority. Black people have to do it. We are over 90% dependent on other communities to provide us employment. We have totally went in the opposite direction from where we were a century ago from today. We have flipped completely. So hopefully this will be the wake-up for us this new year that's coming up.
Well, thank you so much.
You're so welcome, Yutri.
Thank you very much, and Happy New Year to you. Let's hope that we can pull through 2014 in reasonable shape. Okay, thanks a lot. 888-874-4888. We are closing out the year, and it's always a good thing to take time to kind of assess where we are, how far we've come or not come, how much farther do we have to go, how do we get there, how do we reconcile these things. You know, the unfortunate thing, and this is part of, I think, the work that the progressive community has to do, which is to always remember that this business of the apartheid America has just not been solved. You know, that this issue remains at front and center of everything. Now, people would say, my gosh, you're over-obsessed with this. But actually, this is the justice work that 50 years ago, Martin Luther King and others were hoping would have been solved already, would have, not solved, but a great deal of distance would have been covered. And the society could therefore move ahead as a society. But we speak about a society largely in theoretical terms, and we know the truth. And that is that really we are several societies. And we stitched together conveniently because it is so hard to deal with the question of how do you form a just society that for centuries has been operating in a very unjust way, not only by social custom and conditioning, but also by law. I mean, the U.S. Supreme Court was the final say in creating a very unjust society. It sanctioned slavery. It sanctioned inhumanity. It has a long record of doing these kinds of things. So the work that we have to do and not feel, you know, put upon or feel upbraided by people who say, wait, I'm still stuck here at this point of recognizing that the work I have to do as a member of this community is to deal with the unique issues that affect my community. And I could also appreciate the overarching plan, but the overarching plan also has to address this, which is what I talked about with respect to the Green Party and other parties. You can't call yourself progressive in this day and age without dealing with the compounding effect of racial, not just discrimination, but oppression. I mean, a simple thing like housing, all right? Everybody should have housing. It shouldn't be a concept where only certain people should have it. But what did the government actually do? Public tax dollars funded housing for whites in one particular area in the suburbs and funded housing, inferior housing for blacks in what they now call the ghetto or the inner city. That is the deliberate act of government to create generational disparities. So if you're talking in this day and age about housing, you can't just talk about home ownership and so forth. You have to talk about the historic foundations of housing inequity. See, housing racism. Hello, Mike from Michigan. You're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
Yes, I am a mall walker. I go every morning. And if it wasn't for the African-American community, the malls would be out of business. You know, they have so much power that they're not using. I mean, they're constantly going there and keep these malls open, so they do have the power. And I remember you saying it like a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about that.
Yes.
And also, Michael Jordan has Christmas shoes out, and they line out down the mall outside the door, and only a select few people can get these special shoes. I was just wondering, is Michael Jordan like all the rest that just suck all the money and don't give anything back? I don't know, because I haven't heard of him doing anything. So that's my challenge for anybody out there. Does he give back, or does he just keep sucking the money like Clinton's and all the rest?
Well, you make a very good point. The reference that Mike is making is about a new brand of sneaker manufactured by Nike under the Jordan imprint, I guess, the Jordan label, that are going for roughly about $200 a pair. Since Christmas, when the sneakers hit the market, all around the country there have been all kinds of disturbances, people fighting and brawling about getting their hands on these sneakers. And it was not a very pleasant picture. But then it is perfectly understandable. The thing that the issue for me is that this is not the only community that behaves this way, was conditioned to behave this way. We are, as a society, fixated on labels. That's what the advertising business is all about, getting people to do things that logically they wouldn't or shouldn't do, which is spend money that you don't have on things that you don't need. But everybody does it in one way or the other. It happens that sneakers, this kind of, this brand of sneaker, Jordans, are highly, believe it or not, prized and collectible item in the, among young people across the board, but especially among young African and American and Latino people. So the question is Michael Jordan to be held responsible for that? Look, he's a businessman. He makes a product. It's a highly desirable product, which is why they make it a limited supply, so that the people, not everybody would have one. It's the same thing, you know, you can name any label, any high label, high-end label. This is the thinking, you know, you produce a limited number so as to increase the value of the product. The community as a community has not gone through a kind of thinking about how to use money. Money management is not one of the things that generally, in America, generally, that people deal with. And for people like Michael Jordan, the question is, at some point, do you think that that's a good thing? To have your label associated with this kind of negativity, is it something that you think is worthy of your label? And might you begin to rethink that? I don't know personally. I haven't seen what his philanthropic efforts have been, but I do know that he has been a funder of many community-based programs. But at the end of it all is the business itself. He, although he's a businessman, he is a partner with Nike, which is a multinational corporation, and their business is selling a product. And these days, a product is associated with a person, and the person is the ambassador of the product. His product is a highly valued product, both on the consumer end and on the advertising end and on the manufacturing end. So it's all about money. And for the people buying these things, it's about the consciousness that is necessary, especially at a younger age, a consciousness about money and its value and what matters in life. And I don't make any judgments beyond that. Thanks so much, Mike, for your call. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
How are you, Utrecht?
Fine, thank you, and Happy New Year to you.
And I would like to wish the same not only to you but to your beautiful listeners, especially from Dallas, Sister Sarah. you know, I think two of the most important things that we must look at in the year ahead is what's going to happen with Detroit, like I've been saying for the last couple of months. Mm-hmm. It's the test case to what's going to come for middle-class people in this country in regards to will they be able to survive and have any type of life at all with the cutting of pensions that is going to start in Detroit. I was talking with a friend, and he told me that they're talking about cutting anywhere from 80% to 60% of the pensions of these employees. So it's going to be quite interesting. And also, I think...
Go ahead. Are you there?
Oh, also I think what's going to be even more interesting is what's going to happen with this Affordable Care Act within the next, I would say, year. Now, I think one of the things that I'm looking at here in New York City is that most of the municipal unions no longer are under contract at this time. And it's going to be real interesting to see what this new mayor does in regards to health care, because they claim that health care is one of the biggest burdens in the whole system in regards to affordability. Now, I'm wondering if they're just going to go about the business of no longer providing insurance, health care insurance to the workers in New York State and just basically giving them a lump sum amount of money to purchase insurance on the open market. Because I've been noticing that that's been happening in some of these small businesses. And, you know, if you are making over a certain amount of money, it's extremely costly to the individuals. Now, if you're making a low sum amount, then it's somewhat beneficial. So I'm really interested in seeing how that plays out, because I think that's going to be one of the biggest things in 2014, depending on how that goes about. Because
you're correct. You're quite correct.
Will be serious.
You're quite correct on both counts. But the mayor, the incoming mayor, has already indicated that he does not think that the pensions are immune to negotiations. And he, in New York City right now, I don't know if you're aware or if you are in the neighborhood where a community hospital, interfaith hospital, as you know, people are fighting to make sure that it doesn't shut down, and there's every intention to shut it down. Many community-based hospitals that are historically linked to depressed communities that desperately need urgent care, we find that there is a challenge for them to remain open. In Harlem alone, about four hospitals have been closed.
Right.
And we see the trend occurring, not just in New York, but New York being a bellwether for cities of that size and the thinking that informs the actions of the government, particularly the mayor. So we'll see here also, in the new year, it's not so much the mayor, it is whether the city council has the backbone to step up and do its job, especially now that the city council in New York is a majority non-white city council, ostensibly going to bat for these communities that have been under distress for so long. Let's see if they develop a spine and keep this mayor in check and keep the people's interests at the front and center. But thank you so much, Jay. Thank you for your call. And from me and you, a very happy new year. Thank you so much. Okay, Darko from Philly. You're up.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air, dear.
Hi, happy new year.
Thank you. To you too.
Thank you. I was listening to what you said and what other callers have said, especially Sarah from Dallas and even Jay from, I believe, New York City.
Yes.
We've had leaders in the past that foresaw what would happen to us in this present moment, and they were eliminated. You know, I'm not saying that we should just lay down and sleep, but that's something to think about, and that's something that we have to constantly be aware of, that, like I said before in my last call, that this country is not about helping people, particularly African people. We were brought here to work, and that's it, you know, and brought to other countries to work, and they just leave us there. They're not thinking about your health care. They're not thinking about your education. They're not thinking about anything. And when we do, and we have, decide to, you know, so-called pick ourselves from our bootstraps, which makes me laugh. But anyway, we've had our own communities. And what happens? We're a threat to the white supremacist establishment. So, like I said again, there is always a motive for everything that we have tried as Africans to do. And we should, like, pay attention to that always. I mean, there's so many things we can do, but I think on the ground level, the first thing I think we need to do, or not I think, but I know we need to do, is respect each other. Like I said, I've worked as a registered nurse and many other careers that I had in the past. And we, as African people, we do not respect each other. So how do we expect other people to have respect for us? You know, saying good morning, how are you, and being sincere about it, you know, instead of the self-hatred that we always have. I think there has to be something where we have to say to ourselves, you know, that person needs help. single mom that has children, you know, we should look at that and help that individual because we are a community. We cannot expect other people to help us. I'm sorry. You know, we cannot do that because then they don't care. You know, I hear other callers say that, you know, we need to focus not only on us, but we have to think about the other communities. But let me tell you something. I'm one of those people that like to help everybody, but I have experience, and these other communities don't think about us. I'm not saying we should be isolated, but I think we need to really fix ourselves first before we go out and help other people.
Here's the thing. We don't have the time. You just have to keep fixing, and as you run along doing what you have to do. We don't have the time to take things in sequential order. And life is not lived that way. We have to tackle everything all at the same time. So this requires a certain amount of skill. You do have to walk and chew gum at the same time. That's the reality of life. But mm-hmm. I admire what you said about the business of respect. It is the basis of which everything is done within your community and even outside of it. I must repeat a story from my college days where I had to take a course that literally ran into the evening, and it was the only class available. And there was an African-American woman in my same class. And at the end of the class, we went to the ladies' room before hitting the subway. And before she went in, she was dressed in jeans and a top, and came out in full Muslim garb. And I said, "Oh, I didn't know you were Muslim." She says, "I'm not." I said, "So, but you dressed likewise." She says, "Yes. This is how I can be safe in my community." She says, "Dressed like this, I could walk in my community at any time of day or night. Nobody would touch me."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Really?" She says, "No." I said, "How come?" She says, "Because if it is known that a Muslim woman in any way is attacked or in any way is disrespected, everybody knows that somebody would show up, try to find out how this came to be." And it spoke volumes about how within a community people do cultivate an atmosphere of respect by the way they carry themselves and by the relationship they have, the things they tolerate and they don't tolerate. Thanks, Darko, for your call. Really nice, and Happy New Year to you. Ren from Chicago, you're on the air.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to you.
So I've been, and Greg, by the way, I just caught up with PRN in the last year, and you guys are an inspiration all around. Thanks for your work.
Thank you.
I've been listening to everybody calling in, and I'm going to try to be as succinct as I can because it's kind of tangential. The root cause of just about everything that's been mentioned so far can somehow or another be traced to our conditioning to criminality. Take the politics of personal responsibility and black folks, and black folks in particular, and Americans in general, taking care of themselves. We pay taxes. It's not like we don't make. What are you guys doing with the money? Why did the country not snap when Tim Geithner, of all people, was appointed Treasury Secretary? Jamie Dimon has admitted. I mean, this is has admitted to fraud, to fraudulent activity dozens of times, and he's not only a free man, but he's a superstar. HSBC, just hitting the mainstream media-ish now that, $13 billion fine they're paying for a complicity in drug laundering with the Mexican cartel. Why are we worried about, it's like we got somebody standing next to us at the ATM with a gun and we're wondering why we're always broke.
Interesting way you put it.
The humanist movement as a whole needs to focus on complicity in and and a blind eye towards criminality. We're not the ones responsible largely for this position that we're in, and it can be solved, but the right people need to be held accountable, not us.
But I don't think in the end it makes sense to figure out who's responsible. It is, I mean, for the condition, because that would take valuable time away from focusing on what it is you have to do to get out of the condition or to ameliorate the condition.
I think that's part of it. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I agree with you that we our culture, in effect, like this week, the big talk is about the Wolf of Wall Street as great entertainment. And what is the great entertainment? About a guy on Wall Street who was like at the top of the food chain and just gobbled up people and, you know, was just so absolutely corrupt and a gangster. But it is glorified and it is made acceptable. You know, we have that mentality. But that is an American mentality that has seeped into our consciousness. The degree to which we import it is something else. We need to just, you know, take a minute or two and calibrate ourselves, figure out where it is we are and where it is we need to be and what we have to do to get there.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and have a culture, a shared culture that is life affirming, that promotes all these humane qualities that we seek. Have that kind of a culture within our communities, and that's our job. Thank you so much, Eric. No, not Eric, Ren from Chicago. Thank you so much for calling today, and Happy New Year to you. Eric from Brooklyn.
Hello?
Yes, Eric, you're on the air.
Hey, Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to kind of piggyback on Darko and the previous caller. I really think that a part of the reason that we're in this condition is that nobody's held accountable. I think that's a major problem. And accountability would give us information. You know, that's I think a major part of the problem in this country is that there's no information being given. And the information that is being given is inaccurate and is actually deceit. So this is why these things keep being repeated, because the average person, you know, not being able to figure out what's actually impacting them is accepting all the lies, you know. So if these people that are committing these crimes were to be held accountable, if the people that, you know, if there's real investigation, and that leads us to who we choose as our leaders. You know, if our leaders continuously allow the people, the criminals, the worst people, to get away with their crimes, then we're never going to get anywhere. It doesn't matter, you know, because they're in charge of the conditioning, you know.
But yes and no. I don't know that they are in charge of it. I still think that, you know, when it comes to politics, we tend to have a kind of evangelical view of politics, that it is our job to redeem the leaders or to accept insightful leadership from. No, we create the leaders. If you create your own leadership, you therefore have the upper hand of accountability. You can, you know, get rid of them when they cease to be functioning, or you can keep them if they you know, carry out your wishes. But this business of mixing morality and all this evangelism in politics is almost unique to African Americans. African Americans need to approach politics in just one way. It is all about seeing to your needs. And that's all. If people carry out your wishes as a mandate and they take the community seriously, then you reward them with more time in office. If not, get rid of them immediately and be very ruthless about it. I keep saying we have to be ruthless and obsessive about our interests, period. And then let people figure out their morality all in their own time. But the situation is so desperate now, we don't have time to be evangelical about politics. Absolutely not. just get rid of them the minute they mess up. You give them a warning, and then after that, you just get them out of your hair. Put them out of your misery.
Yeah, but then, I mean, they're replaced by other criminals.
No, they can't be replaced by other criminals if a community allows it. Only then would it be the case that they would be replaced by other criminals. Again, politics is you have certain interests that you need to get done. You need your children educated in proper schools that are well-equipped, that are clean, where they have drinking water and proper ventilation, a safe place to play, a library to study, and all the things that they need to get a quality education. If that's not happening in the leadership that you have, cancel the leadership. That's all. And if another person comes along just like that, get rid of them too.
Yeah, I understand that, but I think that, for example, our president is a war criminal. You know, these people need to be prosecuted. Just like they prosecute, they target other people in other countries and try to send a message. These people should be prosecuted because they're operating in a situation where they're basically sociopaths. They're insane. So to think that, I mean, it's not about morality. It's about what they're willing to do to hold on to everything, to control everything. And unless they start being targeted in that way, I don't see how things could change because they control everything. You know,
well,
they control the resources. They control, you know, so if people were to rise up against them, you know, and really hold them accountable, not in the way where we get rid of them because they're expendable to the real decision makers. They're expendable. They're not like Kilpatrick. He served the purpose and now he's in jail.
You know? And he should be, yes.
Exactly.
He should be in jail.
Exactly. The rest of them should be too. And I think if that was happening, the more that happens, the more people will start being conditioned that, number one, there's a consequence for your criminality. You know, there's not too much getting away with it. You're not just going to be kicked out and you go about your business. No, you're actually going to be locked up for it, you know, at those higher levels. And number two, we get more information as to what you're doing. And how
the community, the community did not move against Kilpatrick, you see?
No, but we heard about it.
The system moved against Kilpatrick. So in any event, you know, come the new year, we're going to wrap this discussion up because we're going to be holding people accountable. We're going to be talking about people, naming names, about what's happening and what's not happening in communities. I take your point, and, you know, let's hope that we, in the new year, could get a bit more vigorous about our interests and protecting our interests.
Absolutely. I agree. Thank you. Thank you, Tree.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you so much. Well, it doesn't look like we can take too many more calls, but we certainly can take one from Nana from New York.
Yes, Ma. Hi, this is Nana from New York.
Hello,
and
how are you?
How are you, love?
Fine, thanks a lot.
I just want to say a couple of things, and I enjoyed my sisters and brothers who have related to us and shared their thoughts. They were fantastic thoughts, and we had to do an underground railroad kind of a thing. Pull our thoughts together, and we have different committees that I wrote down that people were talking about, and we must do it ourselves. What's happening, it's the one percenters, and they're taking care of themselves, okay? So we're like ghosts. We've become ghosts. So they're taking care of their own, the one percenters, and they're the ones that are in the ruling class. So we got to say, we can't look for them for anything. We got to do our own thing, an underground railroad position, just like WBAI. They have fantastic suggestions when they have to talk on for the audience to participate, and nothing was done with these fantastic ideas and solutions that were had, you know, as time had began. So now we're going to have, between you and Chris Hedges and Dr. Noel and people of that sort, we have to do an underground railroad and do it ourselves.
Thank
Write
you
down
so
what
much.
You have, and we must come together. Okay,
thank
we'll
you.
Come together, perhaps through you and, or look, Gary, no, he's got his thing going, and the people are behind him, but we now we got to start doing action and formulate committees, okay?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Nana, for your call. And I see a green from Baltimore and DX from LA. I don't know that we could get to you today. I'm so sorry. But I want to say this. This program has come to mean a great deal to me, only because and primarily because people bring their thoughts in assured safety. You see, people can be very frank and open with what they believe and what they're thinking without feeling that, you know, they're hurting anybody or they're putting anybody's nose out of joint. The task that we have on this program is to deal with how we reconcile the huge remnants of this policy in the United States, the way the society was organized and shaped and by law kept the way it has been, with great disparities and great inequities and inequalities based specifically on race. We have many things that we share as a society, many concerns that we share, but we always have to be conscious of the fact that in every single category, we have to look for the contradiction. And the contradiction is, of course, that not one size fits all. It does not work that way. The gun issue is not working that way. Any issue you can look at, we have to come to terms with how do we deal with these inequities without feeling that we're insulting somebody or you know, we stepping on somebody's toes simply because there's an awareness of this permanent underclass that has been created, deliberately created, in order to keep this racial bifurcation going in our society. In the new year, I hope to become far more aggressive about getting thoughts on the table and getting us to think the way we have been thinking, to put one or two notches up, and we'll be in fine shape. I really sincerely wish you all who listen to this program, wish you all a very safe and contemplative new year, that you spend time with people who mean something to you, who bring something to you and add dimension, positive dimension to your life, that we find our purpose and we stay true to the course, and that we try in whatever spheres of influence that we happen to operate in to give our best, to do our best. That is all we can do. And hopefully we, by doing that, create a better society, a better place to live. So I bid you a good new year, a happy new year, a healthy new year, and of course, a very nice intellectual new year. And I'd like to kind of give us all a treat as we close the program with Lionel Hampton, who was a multi-instrumentalist, but very much known for his vibraphone. But he also played piano. He was also a percussionist and a band leader. And this was one of his signature songs. Lionel Hampton died at the age of 94, but was very much, although, you know, he was a staunch Republican, but he funded quite a bit of public housing as well in Harlem and in New Jersey, and him and his wife Gladys, and they're wonderful people. And we remember him today and salute him and Mary Lou Williams for improving the culture of this nation. So with Lionel Hampton's Flying Home, I wish you the very best for 2014.